got Jill Fink today with me, who is the co-founder of Mugshot Coffee House, which is a sustainable business and coffee house in Philadelphia, located across from Eastern State Penitentiary, which is a long ago abandoned prison, but a very imposing and eye-catching fortress. Jill, you started Mugshot in June of 2004, and what caused you to start a coffee house and one that was sustainable as well?
Well, we opened our doors in June of 2004, the very end of June, but it was actually a process that probably began about almost exactly two years before that, where I would say maybe, you know, I had lived in this neighborhood. I had bought a house in the neighborhood in 1999 and loved the neighborhood. It's a neighborhood that has, you know, great restaurants and pubs, is, you know, has a great active population of people that do a lot of outdoor activities, but there was no coffee house. At the time, Philadelphia, it was also pre-smoking ban, and, you know, all of the bars and restaurants in the neighborhood were, you know, typically pretty smoke-filled, as you would expect most bars to be. And so with my neighbors, I would, you know, lament the fact that we didn't have any type of coffee house or community gathering place to go to that wasn't a bar or restaurant, and specifically one that, you know, you could go and not be inundated with cigarette smoke. And my neighbors agreed, and, you know, we would often, you know, talk about this as we were standing around at the dog park. And then finally, I just kind of decided that I would start, you know, looking into what it would take to open a coffee house on my own. Spent a little bit of time doing that and quickly realized that I would be in way over my head and didn't know what I was doing. And to some extent, just kind of put the idea on the back burner, but had mentioned it to friends of mine that this is something that I was working on. And I would say within the following few months, a good friend of mine had been laid off from work. She had worked in technology, and it was the second time she had been laid off. And she had said, you know, let's look into this. Let's see if this is something we can do. Within 2 weeks of her being laid off, I had a back injury that put me on disability. And all of a sudden, we were both in this position where I had disability income. She had unemployment income. And we had all this time on our hands and really dug in and started working on a business plan to do a coffee house in that Fairmount neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And how did it come to be socially responsible? Well, let's take a moment. Can you tell us about some of what makes you socially responsible? What are some of the practices that you implement now after being in business for 5.5 years?
I would say to a large extent, a lot of the socially responsible things that we do are things that we have done from the very beginning, but to some extent we've been able to do more. So in that particular case, an example would be, you know, when we first opened, we were purchasing 10% wind energy. It was, you know, a nominal amount, but something that, you know, that we felt that we could do that wasn't going to overstretch us too far, and that demonstrated that we did have a commitment to sustainable energy. Now, 4.5 years later, we're 100% wind energy. And over the course of that period of time, we were able to just gradually ramp up a little bit more so that, you know, we weren't ever overstretching ourselves. And it was one of those decisions that, you know, my business partner and I are very different people in a lot of ways, and I'm much more pie in the sky and we need to do it all now, and she comes from a business background and was much more realistic about the ways things that should happen. And honestly, even when we were doing our business plan, everything that we were putting into it, you know, related back to the social responsibility and the triple bottom line philosophy. But to a large extent, you know, she was always saying, you know, well, if it makes financial sense to do it, and if we can make money, but if not, like, we're going to change it. And it was a big source of contention for us, because this was my, you know, idea to begin with. And I knew that if we couldn't do it in a socially responsible way, it wasn't something I wanted to do. And it wasn't until it was probably the fall of 2002 that we attended what I believe was the first Social Venture Institute that was held in Philadelphia. And both of us being there and meeting lots of other entrepreneurs that had successful triple bottom line businesses was a real turning point for us both, but especially for Angie to kind of see, like, we can do this and we will make money and we don't have to compromise on our ideals in order to make that happen.
Was it part of your vision to create a business that was socially responsible, or is it just a natural reflection of your values? And some of the other things that you do, you have a partnership with or Equal Exchange. So you have fair trade coffee, you have free range eggs, you have locally grown and sourced products like produce and dairy, milk and yogurt. So those are just some of the things in addition to the WIN credits. And I want to also loop back into what you do with your employees and some of your recycling. But was this all a reflection of, well, of course this is how I want to develop a business because this is what I believe is the right thing and this is more or less how I lead my life? Or was this, hey, I want to really carve out this kind of utopian, not only a coffee house for the community, but I really want it to be a socially responsible business because I hear those are good or I believe in that?
It really was the first thing that you mentioned. It was kind of like, well, duh, like, why wouldn't you, you know, do this kind of thing? And to the same extent, you know, like, we've tried to create a business that, you know, helps to educate customers about the things that we do without preaching to them or making anyone feel guilty because they don't, you know, purchase organic free-range eggs at home, you know. To a large extent, a big portion of our customer base is already people that do those things at home. They incorporate them into their lives at home, and they visit us because we reflect their own values. For others, you know, we're simply like the neighborhood coffee shop, or we're the closest place to them, or we're there at whatever moment they, you know, need lunch. And to the extent that we can, we use those opportunities to, you know, explain to people the, you know, what our values are and, you know, why it's important. For me, it was just, you know, growing up, you know, having these social justice values, and that's, you know, how I see it. It's socially responsible, but when you come down to it, it's a matter of social justice as well. And so there was never any question that our coffee would be fair trade and organic, and that we would source from local farms whenever we could. And then to the extent that we do a lot of, you know, charitable giving and charitable donations, you know, those things are the organizations that we give to and the events that we, you know, involve ourselves with are an extension of and reflection of our values.
So this was, you guys were developing this business around 2002, between 2002, 2004, and then you launched. And you had mentioned that Angie, there was some contention because she had come from a business background, and was her view that these are, that there are luxuries? Was her view that this is going to attract a different type of customer source and it's not going to make us mainstream? I want to get into, because I think there are other people who have partners who don't always see eye to eye on social responsibility or social mission. So I want to kind of get into what the competing views were and then how you worked through them. And I know you mentioned going to the conference and seeing other businesses that were successful in this way. But if you could just share a little bit about that.
Yeah, I would say, you know, for Angie, I would say the issue first and foremost in starting a business was, you know, the business needs to be profitable. Like, we need to make money, and we need to do what we need to do in order to make money. And my feeling was, you know, we need to create a socially responsible business and find a way to make sure that it makes money. And if we can't, then we say that we tried and we made our best effort and, you know, we gave it a shot. We'd say what we both, I mean, we're very good business partners in that sense that we balance each other in that way. You know, when she certainly was on board, and, you know, and we did a lot of research going into writing our business plan on, you know, trends in the organic foods movement and trends in local food movements. And I would say at the time, you know, the local food movement was really kind of taking hold and to some extent even becoming the new organic right around that time. And I think that that trend has continued over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. She was great for me. This business never would have happened if it weren't the two of us, you know, coming together and eventually, you know, really seeing eye to eye on the things that needed to happen. But, you know, if it were me, I probably would have said, like, we're going to do 100% wind energy from day one, and it would have really hurt us to be able to do that. And I think being able to take, like, baby steps for certain things allowed us to be in a position where we were profitable from very early on, where we could add, you know, and there were things that, you know, we did do from very early, like recycling was a no-brainer. We composted from day one, developing relationships with the farmers so that, you know, they would pick up our composting and take it back to the farm and use it to then, you know, grow the vegetables that we'd be, you know, buying from them the next season. You know, it enabled us to, at this point, we now have a simple IRA program set up for our employees, but it's not something that we were able to do until, I would say, probably about a year and a half ago. We did have a more limited type of profit sharing that we did with employees prior to setting up the IRA, but even the profit sharing wasn't something that happened until we were in probably year three. So we, you know, gradually, like, set goals for ourselves of things that we wanted to be able to do. But I think that, you know, having someone with a business background helped to be able to make those decisions in a way that was motivated not strictly by emotions, but, you know, thinking through what was really possible for us to do.
Right. No, I think that the balance that you talk about is really important. I'm writing a post today that, you know, because if you're having a business with a social mission, you're not going to get preferential treatment until you prove that you have a service that people want at a price and a quality that meets their expectations. And then you might have increased loyalty and other benefits that come with that. But out of the gate, you really have to prove the business model, which is what you're talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. And even if you have the customer base, if you promise too much too soon or try to do too much too soon, then you put yourself in a situation where it's not sustainable as a business. Mm-hmm. You know, your practices are sustainable, but you can't keep, mm-hmm. you know, a business that's not profitable can't survive.
So,
and, you know, it's finding a way that I know that we do more benefit to the community and to the farms that we purchase from and to the, you know, to the fair trade coffee growers from whom we purchase, that, you know, if we're in business, then, you know, we don't benefit anybody by, you know, by overpromising and not being able to keep our doors open.
Exactly. You've been able to deliver more, you've been able to invest more in wind energy over the long run by starting at 10% than if you had started at 75 or 100 and you know, probably, well, it could have contributed to a failing business. So
exactly.
Right. Was there one business or entrepreneur that Angie encountered that kind of shifted her perspective on this?
Trying to think. I remember specifically, like, some of, like, the one of the speakers at the event, and this is kind of ironic even, too, that his name is escaping me right now, but he's one of the co-owners of Honest Tea, and he was one of the speakers at the conference that year, and he spoke. He, you know, told some funny stories. He's a really nice guy. I've seen him a number of times over the years since then, and he had said, you know, who knows if, you know, what I would do if, you know, 5 years from now I'm approached by, you know, by Coca-Cola and they want to, like, buy me. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I remember Angie and I kind of looking at each other going, wow, like, really? Like, you know, like, you would sell out like that? And sure enough, I think, like, last year, at least part of their company, and I don't know what percentage it is now, has been sold to Coca-Cola. And that's an issue that I still really, you know, struggle with. And I'm kind of getting a little off topic, but I will circle back around. Is, you know, and it kind of gets back to the conversation that we were just having. Like, we do more for the community by being able to, like, start small and grow and keep our doors open than we would if we tried to do too much too soon and have a failing business. And I wonder, too, if, you know, if I felt like we've been approached and asked to franchise. And, you know, I don't really feel like our model is totally, like, works with a franchise model. But it's not something we've ever really been interested in doing. Like, we want to maintain the independence of it. But I sometimes, you know, go back to that question and wonder, you know, would we do more if, you know, if there were more of us that were, you know, preaching this sustainability, triple bottom line philosophy.
What benefits have you seen by creating a business that's socially responsible? You already had the market cornered in the Fairmount neighborhood because you were the only coffee shop. Was it a personal satisfaction, or can you talk about how it benefited your business as well?
You know, I have no doubt that, you know, if we were to buy, you know, deli meats from, you know, some, like, you know, Dietz and Watson or, you know, some large national chain, that that we would save money, and that would, you know, just in terms, strictly speaking, in terms of a bottom line number, that we would be more profitable. But it would never cross my mind to do it. I mean, it gives me tremendous satisfaction to know that we've been able to create this triple bottom line business that's successful and profitable. And in the face of a lot of people telling us that it wasn't possible and we couldn't do it, you know, we're really lucky to be in Philadelphia, I think, where, and I'm sure that there's other pockets like this throughout the country, but where there are a number of, especially restaurants, that source local foods, and we're really lucky to, you know, live so close to Lancaster County and Bucks County, where there's a tremendous amount of really fertile farmland and a great history of family farming. You know, to a large extent, I credit that to Judy Wicks from the White Dog Cafe, who, you know, really made that possible in this region, I think in the same way that Alice Waters did in the San Francisco area. And, you know, and listening to Judy speak, and I think, you know, going back to your initial question about whether or not there was, you know, one person that spoke at that initial SVI conference that really had an impact on us, you know, Judy Wicks talking about how she started out and, you know, realizing that, you know, once she made her whole restaurant sustainable, you know, being able to sit back and say, like, this is great, I did this, I'm the only restaurant in Philadelphia that can claim, you know, X, Y, and Z. And then kind of took a step back from that and said, well, if I really cared about these farmers and I really, you know, cared about the food that people were putting in their bodies, and if I really cared about the animals that, you know, were being raised to be feed, you know, to be food in our restaurants, then I would do more to make it possible for other people to do the same thing. And she did. You know, she created the Fair Food Project and has made it possible for, you know, all types of, you know, restaurants, from coffee houses and cafes to, you know, full-scale, you know, white linen restaurants, to be able to do the same thing. And it's great because those are the restaurants that I want to support when I go out, and now I have a whole lot to choose from when I do.
So, and you are a founding company for B Corporation, and B Corporation is and they're an association and a resource to promote sustainable businesses based in the Philadelphia area as well. What made you want to become a founding corporation, and how has that helped your business?
I think, we were approached to be a B Corp early on in the process, in the founding of B Corporation, because we were members of the Sustainable Business Network here in Philadelphia and fairly active members in that organization. For us, you know, it seemed like, again, it's kind of like a no-brainer that, you know, here's something that's happening beyond just our immediate community that's on a much larger scale, and, you know, an opportunity to be a part of it from the very beginning, and to really, you know, be part of a group of businesses that are slowly changing the way business looks, and to kind of buck the system of traditional business models that say, you know, that you make your money and then you can give it away to charity if you want. And, you know, this is an opportunity for all of us to come together and, you know, flip that on its head and say, like, we do well by doing good. You know, you don't have to have one before the other. You know, you can make money and you can be successful by, you know, following your convictions. And it was really exciting to be a part of that.
Has it helped your business? Because you started off doing some programs, and then you mentioned some in the years that you've been around, you've been able to implement an IRA program. Most or all of your employees receive health insurance. They get their premiums covered. Was B Corporation, did they help you kind of research and implement these programs, or are there advantages in terms of guidance that they can provide you, or is it more just an association or branding?
I would say it's probably a little bit of both. I would say that, you know, we have probably not, I would say for us, we already had a pretty strong network of resources and of other businesses through being part of the Sustainable Business Network. And so, you know, when we were researching, you know, IRAs, we were able to reach out to other members who are now B Corps as well, but at the time were also, you know, members of the Sustainable Business Network, and talk to them and say, you know, are you doing this for your employees, and what are you doing, and what did you find worked best, and to use those resources. I would say that B Corp probably also is able to offer some of those same services, but we haven't taken advantage of it through them.
So
I would still say that, you know, that as a resource, they probably can still be very helpful to other businesses.
Okay. How do you decide? Do you have a wish list? So, you know, in the next 2 years, in the next 3 years, we want to be able to offer our employees, you know, full health care and IRAs and these types of benefits, for example. How do you decide when to integrate these new programs, and how do you decide that you can, you know, afford to do them? Because part of it is some financial juggling.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as we're at the beginning of 2010, my business partner and I will kind of, you know, normally we would try to do this in January, but to set some goals for ourselves for the year and take a look at things. You know, last year, the very end of 2008, early 2009, we expanded the square footage of our first location, and that not quite doubled the available square footage of the store. And that was, you know, something that we primarily did in response to customer requests to have more space, that we just couldn't accommodate the number of customers that we had coming in that wanted to sit and stay. And so we did that. It was, you know, very costly to do so, and it definitely had an impact on, you know, some of the other things that we might have wanted to do that year. But we were able to use another business that was a member of the Sustainable Business Network. Everything was done sustainably with, you know, either new materials that were sustainably manufactured or, you know, with a lot of reclaimed materials as well, which was really exciting. And I think our customers responded to that and saw that, you know, we really do put our values out there. This year, we 3 years, 3.5 years ago, we opened a second location in the Manion section of Philadelphia, you know, all of which, you know, is great, but it also kind of takes away from some of what our profits would be for the year. This year, we're currently in the process of opening a third location in the Brewery Town section of Philadelphia, which is north of Fairmount Avenue, and we'll be at 28th and Girard Avenue, which, you know, is a, you know, neighborhood that is in transition. And a lot of people think that we're nuts for doing it, but, you know, we're working with the Commerce Department and the Merchants Fund here in Philadelphia, along with some developers who are really working to redevelop that business corridor. And when we wrote our business plan, we had said that, you know, with the success of our first business, we had hoped to be able to build on that success and open a location where we could be a catalyst for change in a neighborhood that needed it. And that's exactly what we're doing. So it was a long-term goal that's finally coming to fruition. You know, I think that, you know, we still have goals to be able to pay our full health insurance premiums for our employees. Right now we're only paying a portion of them, and as healthcare costs have continued to rise, that percentage of what we've been able to pay for employees has steadily decreased, and it's really disappointing. It's tremendously disappointing, but remains a goal for us, and who knows what will happen with, you know, this healthcare reform that's taking place, but with any luck, that, you know, that may be able to help us to better take care of our employees as well.
So what type of tactics or strategies could you convey to other businesses? Is it having a roadmap of policies or practices, sustainable policies or practices that you want to put into place, and then looking at when you reach a certain profitability to be able to implement them? And for the IRA program, for example, how did you know when the time was to start that? Was it a wish-listed item for a while? I mean, I want to look. It seems like you continue to develop and not stagnate in your social responsibility programs and initiatives. And so I'm just trying to figure out how you, if there's any takeaways that we can share with other businesses about how you do that. Is it road mapping and then budgeting? And is it something that you revisit, you know, every 6 months, every 12 months?
It is something that we definitely look at on an annual basis. And I think, you know, while we don't specifically say that we're going to sit down every, you know, 3 months or 6 months and look at it, it definitely comes up. And, you know, I think part of it is knowing your industry, and knowing, you know, how social responsibility can fit into your specific industry. So, you know, certainly taking care of your employees is something that you can do across the board, regardless of what type of industry you're in. But if you have a, if you sell furniture, you know, can you sell, you know, can you say that by, you know, the end of 2010 that, you know, 10% of the inventory that you carry will be of wood products will be sourced from, you know, from sustainable woods, or sustainably grown woods? Is there something where you can say that, you know, a certain portion of what you have will not be, you know, synthetic fabrics or will be naturally dyed fabrics? Is there, you know, opportunities to carry, you know, rugs or textiles that are fairly traded? And I think that, you know, part of it is knowing your inventory and knowing your industry and knowing your products and then really thinking critically about, you know, the source of those products and where they come from. And I think if you follow that chain back to its source, that really will answer a lot of your questions about, you know, what kind of impact you're having on the environment, and where there's opportunities, you know, along that chain to be able to make changes. You know, for us, like sourcing from local farms, you know, was a no-brainer. And it's, you know, it's one thing to be able to say that we're supporting, you know, local farmers and the local economy and keeping, you know, family farms in operation. But, you know, the other impact is that, you know, the because the food is coming from a much shorter distance, we're really reducing the carbon footprint of that food. It's not being shipped, you know, across the country or from another country to be able to get to us. And people, you know, can taste that in their foods.
How do you communicate your mission to your customers? You mentioned this briefly that you want them to understand what you're doing, but you're certainly not trying to preach them or make them feel bad about their personal behavior. So I know, for example, that Stonyfield Farm communicates their mission and some of their beliefs on the lids of their yogurt. What are some of the ways that you reach out to your customers and bring them, involve them in your mission?
I would say, you know, we have the mission and the website, or the mission and our philosophy on our website. You know, there's some of the little things that we'll have around the store. You know, in the bathrooms, we, you know, have a little note next to the soap dispenser that lets people know that, you know, we purchase our soaps from Sun and Earth, and it's all, that it's another local business, and it's also biodegradable products. You know, our menu indicates, you know, which food is local or humanely raised, what is organic, that our coffees are fair trade. You know, we try to just incorporate it into our operations in a way that customers can see and read. If they have any questions, that they have an opportunity to talk to our staff or to ask additional questions, but to not, you know, be too much in people's faces about it. I think that, you know, we don't want customers to feel embarrassed that they don't know what it means that something might be fair trade, you know, and we'd like for them to feel comfortable enough to ask us, you know, what does it mean that it's fair trade? Because we'll have customers that come in and they say, like, I don't know, I just want a regular cup of coffee. Can I just get a regular cup of coffee? And, you know, it's an opportunity, you know, in 10 seconds or less to be able to explain that, you know, a fair trade cup of coffee is a regular cup of coffee. We're not adding anything to it, but this is what it means that it is fair trade. So I never want a customer coming in and feeling like they're being preached at or to feel insignificant in some way because they don't understand what it is that we're doing. But I think that once we have an opportunity to explain it to them where there's either little bits of information in the store that they can see and they can go home and do research on it on their own if they'd like, or to ask one of us, you know, to explain a little bit more, then it's an opportunity to kind of bring them on this journey with us. And, you know, and I don't know if it's just me, but, like, I feel like so much of this, it really is just kind of like a no-brainer kind of stuff. Like, once you understand it, you're like, oh, well, of course I would, you know, buy fair trade over a non-fair trade product when the quality is there and, you know, and the price is comparable. Our goal is to bring these people on a journey with us so that they feel like they want to go and talk to their friends and family and explain what they learned and, you know, to pay it forward.
So I'd love to kind of wrap up soon, but ask you about one big setback and one big triumph. And it sounds great. You've got this wonderful community coffee shop, two of them now, soon to be three. Business is reflected in your personal values are reflected in your business. you know, you're profitable and you're able to offer your customers and your employees and your suppliers these great benefits of conducting business this way. But there's still some difficulties because you're running a business and you're working with different constituencies. So could you talk to us about one of the setbacks you've experienced, and then I'd love to hear one of your big triumphs as well.
Setback. You're right. I certainly know that we've had them. I guess maybe try to put them out of my head and not think about them so much. I think that I don't know. That's a great question. You know, I would say one of, and maybe this isn't a giant setback, and but something that that continually presents itself as a challenge. And I would say that this is not specific to a socially responsible business, but is, you know, pretty industry standard, which is that, you know, it's maintaining staff and trying to create an environment where staff want to stick around and be with us for a while. And I think to a great extent we've been able to do that. And one is because the staff that we have, you know, we hire people that share our mission and philosophy, and they want to be a part of it. I think, you know, it's disappointing. It's bittersweet, I should say, when we have staff that have been with us for a long time that leave and move on to something else. And typically it's because, you know, they finish school and they graduate and they get a job within their field. And so they've become like family to us, and we're certainly happy for them, but it's always hard to see them go. And sometimes it's, you know, it's hard to fill those shoes, especially when your staff or your customers have become really accustomed to seeing those people around as well. At the same time, we've also had customers that have come in and that have, you know, offered our employees jobs that they've left to take because they recognize the passion that they have and their work ethic. I'm not really answering the questions in terms of a big setback, but
but that's interesting, and I was curious about what type of employees, I mean, whether you attracted them, they were attracted to the business because of their values, or if not, then how you really get them to represent and carry forth your overall mission to that, you know, to the front line of customer service. But it sounds like at least the majority of that they already have those values integrated into their personal lives and that they're eager to talk about them and to share and to learn more.
Yeah. And to the extent that, you know, and there's certainly, you know, when we have certain, like, business needs that need to be filled and we need a skill set, we're not always able to, sometimes we need someone that has the skill set and brings it to the job from day one. And when there's those times that we can't hire someone that already, you know, is on board with our mission and philosophy, we bring them on board to do the job that they need to do. But, you know, like I was talking about with our customers as well, we kind of bring them on that journey with us so that they understand, you know, why it is that we've made the business decisions that we've had to purchase from certain suppliers. You know, the work that we do with them and then working with their coworkers and having their, you know, their fellow employees talk to them about the importance of things, you know, they, again, come on that journey with us and are eventually able to, you know, talk to customers and their friends and family outside of work about these things.
So, Jill, before we wrap up here, is there one big triumph that you want to share with us?
I mean, honestly, I think that the fact that we're, you know, still open 4.5 years after, you know, after opening is, I don't want to say it's amazing, but, you know, we're still, as a business, we're still growing. you know, not just in terms of like new locations, but, you know, from 1 year to the next, we're still seeing growth as a business. And, you know, the fact that we've been able to, you know, kind of create this out of nothing, you know, and, you know, it was one thing to like to have a job that you, you know, that you complain about and you like you hate your boss and you don't want to get up and go to work every day, and to be able to become an entrepreneur and to remove yourself from that and to do it on your own and to be able to make it has been a pretty tremendous accomplishment that I don't know that I ever, you know, you just start doing something. I don't know that when we first opened, I knew where I would see myself, you know, 5 years later. But here we are on the verge of opening a third store. Like, who ever knew that that's where we would be today?
That's awesome. And you did it all.
And we did it all. You know, I mean, we did, you know, when it came, like, when we first secured the location at 21st and Fairmount, the space was an apartment. It wasn't a commercial space. We went in there with, you know, Angie and myself, some friends, some sledgehammers, and, like, demoed the whole place on our own. The outside of the building was a mess. It needed to be completely, like, repainted. And the landlord was like, if you want to do it, you can do it. But, you know, I'm not doing it, and I'm not paying for it. And, you know, we were out there for weeks scraping paint, priming, getting the building ready to paint, you know, to the extent that we actually had people stop us and ask us for our cards and say, like, oh, are you an all-female painting crew? Like, I would love for you to, you know, come, you know, give me a quote. And we were like, well, the coffee house business doesn't work out, then maybe that's what we'll be doing. But, you know, I mean, we, you know, stained wood, we tiled, we, you know, which is not to say that we didn't hire contractors, but we did a tremendous amount of the work ourselves. You know, we didn't have, you know, we were not, you know, trust fund babies that had, you know, money from our parents to support us. Everything was done with, you know, loans that we took out ourselves. And, you know, certainly to some extent our friends and family helped us with the sweat equity that went into it. But financially speaking, you know, we were on our own.
Well, Jill, thank you. It was really interesting to hear the development of Mugshots to date with nearly three cafes. And it's terrific. And I think one of the things that I've taken away from this conversation is the small things that add up to make a business socially sustainable, like composting and recycling and looking at where you purchase your supplies and looking at purchasing a 10% wind energy credit. So I think you've given us some great tools that people can implement from the beginning when they're creating their own social mission programs.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Jill.
Thank you, Olivia.
For more interviews about cause capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.